the author of viral mythology, Marie Jones. The song by Donovan sort of operates on the premise that Atlantis was a real place, but the people of that fabled location inspired stories of gods eons after Atlantis sunk into the ocean. That's basically the theme we're talking about tonight. When we come back, we open up the phone lines with your questions, and we'll poke around on a couple of other ideas we have. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Marie, we heard the song in the break there from Donovan about Atlantis. Let's talk about that one for a moment. We haven't touched on places as being myths. What's your take on that? Are there...
Perfect example of a fictional location, a fictional island that Plato wrote about, and yet from that point on, it's like everybody has been searching for this place. We don't even know if it really exists, or did he make it up? Was he basing it on something that he knew about? We still haven't found the definitive location. There's been a lot of clues. People have located a lot of areas where they think Atlantis might have been. But this, I think, it's a moral story about people, getting sort of living beyond their means, and getting bigger than their britches. And Atlantis is a an example of, I'm losing my voice, a place that apparently sunk into the ocean overnight. Now, we know that could happen if there's a supervolcanic eruption or a massive tsunami or a comet flyby. There are actual natural disasters that could cause a little island to sink, but nobody's found it yet. It is based on a fictional story. But again, fiction always has a little bit of truth to it. People write about New York City. They write novels about New York City. They write novels about Rome or Paris or little islands that they went to on their vacation. So was Plato really writing about a place that he believed was real, or was it a mythological, totally fantastical location that we now everybody is searching for?
Well, I can give you an even more recent example that's very similar. As this mega hit movie that came out a couple of years ago inspired many, many people to want to move to the planet Pandora. Maybe there is a Pandora somewhere in the universe, but I heard it myself among people I know. Gosh, I want to move to Pandora. That looks so cool.
Yeah, that was the one with the blue people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. People, the lines are getting blurred between, fantasy or fiction and nonfiction. We call it faction, fiction based on fact, or fiction that contains a little bit of fact.
Well, I thought you could add it. You could add a chapter to the book if you wanted to explore the concept of the multiverse. If you believe, as some cosmologists do, cutting-edge quantum physicists, that the multiverse exists, in which case anything you can think of has happened. There's a billion yous out there, which, of course, means I know how some people would take it. They are encouraged by that because it means that Middle Earth somewhere exists, that there's a Frodo and a Sam and a Bilbo and Gandalf, and they want to live in that world.
Well, yeah. In other words, everything that we can imagine exists in reality somewhere. Somewhere out there in, one of the parallel universes where there are people just like us, or that every idea that we can conceive of has to have some kind of physicality out there somewhere. I'm not sure if I really believe that or if that's necessarily true, but it does make you wonder, when we get an idea, when we imagine something, even something that hasn't been created or invented yet, where is that coming from? We've got to get that idea from somewhere. How people invent new objects that then become a part of our everyday existence. Where did they get that idea? Did it just pop in their head, or are they pulling it from somewhere where it already was present, where it already existed?
It strikes me, and I know we touched on it briefly earlier, but that a central question that's raised by your book for me is whether we've lost something along the way. We have computers and knowledge. We know so much more than we used to about how things work and how to build things, how to control our environment, destroy our planet, kill each other, and do wonderful things as well. But I get the feeling that we lost something along the way. You mentioned in the book about Native Americans. You talk about some of the petroglyphs and things that are right here on this continent, and in caves where Native American tribes, indigenous people here a long time ago, would go in these caves, and they felt that in some of these special places that the boundary between the natural world and the spirit world was thinner in those places. Right. And the Irish have a saying about that, places where the world is thin. I sort of explored that when we were working on the book about the Skinwalker. What's your take on that?
Do you think
that there are places where the world is thin?
I'm a big Stephen King fan, and I love his Dark Tower series, and he talks about thinnies, places where the veil between realities are thinner than others. And yeah, I mean, I think that whether you want to call them sort of paranormal hotspots or places that have some kind of electromagnetic anomalies at work, or the environment is up to something, I think that there are places all around the globe where people can tap into or alter their consciousness. Something in their physiology is able to align with something in the environment to create an altered state of consciousness, or maybe an experience of another reality, or even maybe an opening by which some of the things that we call extraterrestrial, cryptid, you know, aliens, entities, demons, angels, these could be dimensional entities that are coming through these thin areas. Yeah, I mean, I can't prove it, but personally, sure. I tend to think that things are more interdimensional than they might actually be. Like, in terms of, we talk about extraterrestrials. I know Jacques Vallée was real big on this whole interdimensional theory.
Right.
But what's funny about that is people kind of laughed at that first. They were so intent on the idea that anything outside of us came from another planet or somewhere else in our universe, somewhere else in the cosmos. But he said, well, wait a second. You know, a lot of this stuff may be coming from other dimensions. And now today, you can't talk to a quantum physicist or a theoretical physicist without them discussing the possibility of a number of different dimensions, a number of different realities. Again, the multiverse, parallel universes, alternate dimensions, whatever label you want to give it. So if scientists are kind of leaning in that direction, why can't I?
What about in a literal sense? Vallée talking about fairies, leprechauns, gnomes being the equivalent of today's aliens, that people really were seeing them back then, that instead of, as people, if you believe people see actual aliens today, that it's basically the equivalent of seeing the same thing. Are you on board with that?
I love the idea that the beings, for lack of a better word, that humans have seen and interacted with over time have an archetypal quality to them, and that the type of beings change and evolve with society. And I remember, I think it was Nick Redfern talking with Nick about how, okay, first, you know, in the 50s, we had the sort of Roswell aliens. And then in the 60s and the 70s, you get into the beautiful contactee type aliens with the long blonde hair and the blue eyes, and how that sort of fit in perfectly with what was going on in society at the time. And then in the 80s and you know, the more paranoid era, you had the reptilians come along all of a sudden, and how the entities that we were reporting, that people were reporting, almost seemed to evolve on a sociological level with whatever was going on in the collective. I always loved that idea. So fairies may have been the collective archetype of the time, and they maybe then evolved into elves, and then maybe they evolved into, you know, something a little more sinister, maybe some type of demon or something, as we evolved as a society. Or is that they could be very regional too. I know fairies for the British Isles, we didn't see a whole lot of fairies here in the United States. I think we were seeing other things that fit with what was happening with our society. society.
You know, I can't help but wonder if there was a deeper spiritual connection that people used to have before we became so educated and logical and skeptical, whether we
Right.
saw these other beings because we didn't know we were not supposed to see them.
Wouldn't that
And
be
now we
perfect?
know we're not supposed to see them, so we don't see them. Or if we do see them, we explain them away somehow.
Or we saw them and now we don't see them because we're not looking. We're looking at our computers, we're looking at our cell phones, we're looking, you know, down at our little tablets or what have you. And it's almost like that part of the brain maybe that was receptive to seeing those things has just been shut down and replaced by a new way that we're searching out information. I think our ancestors lived so much closer to the earth. They were so much more aware of nature, whatever was in nature. I think they probably had a much deeper connection with not just the seen aspects of nature, but the unseen. But today, we just don't have that connection anymore. And like you said, have we lost something? Absolutely. We now live in a time where there's more information coming at us than ever before. The problem is the quality of that information is not all good. And we end up spending the vast majority of our time trying to pick and choose the good stuff from the bad, that we're probably missing so many things around us that we've just sort of toned out because we're so focused on what's right in front of us on our computer screen.
That's kind of what I was hoping you would get into. We could even do another whole other section on psychoactive plants and how early people's used any of that stuff. But I wanted to get a couple of phone calls in on the wildcard line. Troy in Virginia. Good morning, Troy.
Hey, good morning. Hello?
Yeah, we're here. How are you doing?
Okay, all right. Yeah, I'm listening to your program. This is pretty good. My question is, in all the history of different cultures, as explorers went around, you know, moving their ideas around, destroying people's original thoughts and writings and stuff, and them through like I said, the computers and stuff, people not using the lack of imagination without books and stuff, how much did this really destroy society as in a present culture now in fact and fiction? All right, I'll take my hands off.
Okay, well, Troy, I don't know that that Marie would say it's destroyed civilization, but it's certainly changed it.
Yeah, I think it's destroyed some aspects of civilization. Well, let's put it this way. It's made life better in a sense because we have access now to so much more. We can talk to people and share ideas globally. We couldn't do that before unless we actually got in a boat or a plane or what have you, or on a donkey's back and traveled around. So we have access to so many more people, so many more ideas, but the negative part of that, the destructive part of that, is that there's so much more crap that is coming at us. There's so much more information that we really don't need, and we're bombarded with it, and we end up spending a lot of time, a lot of wasted time, processing information that is really not important to us having a better life or a better society.
Well, I can't agree with you more. I mean, I can't imagine how many hours a week I waste. I get like 800 emails a day, and half of it, I swear it's made up in a factory, that there's a factory of people somewhere just cranking out crap. Outrageous rumors, a lot of it politically motivated, or the left or the right. And you got to go to Snopes or someplace else to weed through it, because it weaves a little bit of truth and in with the fiction, but it's mostly fiction.
Yeah. And can you imagine what we could be doing with that time?
Yeah.
Going after our dreams, you know, living a good life, spending time with people we really care about, fulfilling our bucket list, what have you. But instead, we're just sort of stuck trying to figure out is this important? Do I need this? Do I need that? So this person says I need this, but I don't know. We're just so confused and frustrated now with all this information.
We'll go to John in California. And John, we're going to a break in about 2.5 minutes. So if we are not able to finish it, we'll finish it up on the other side. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Thank you. Two things real quick about Atlantis. You know, back up 10,000 years ago, they say that there was so much water locked up in icebergs and things that the sea levels were lower. That's why it made it easier for people to get to the Aborigines to get to Australia, you know, in both
hop around.
Yeah, you know, and the Maoris and Hawaii and all that. It could just be that, you know, that Atlantis was a city, thriving city that's got covered up by when the ice started to melt. But that's just a theory. I just want to see if you guys want to talk about that. But one other thing I wanted to mention about, people were closer to the Earth back 10,000 years ago and 1,000 years ago and all that, but it was a bad existence. People didn't live, longer than 30 years on average or something, and they had to fight off animals and things like that. So we slowly but surely, domesticate ourselves and started controlling our environment. And then the problem that seems to happen to me is that once you start that, it's hard to stop it. And pretty soon it can spin out of control. And that's the problem that we face once you develop a car, when it's going 10 miles an hour, it's not so bad. But when it can go 200 miles an hour, then you have the problem of it wrecking it kind of thing.
Exactly.
So I think to me, that's the problem facing society is when what we've developed to control our environment and to, not to live on the, on a hillside and have to fight off a bear to survive.
You're right.
When does the bear become the computer, you know?
Yeah, that's, and I agree with that. We live a lot longer now. We have a lot more options. We have a lot more ways to fulfill ourselves. But you're right. I think we're almost at the point, though, where we're leaning way too much on technology, and it's going to steal some of the humanness, our humanity from us.
And I can imagine what would happen if we lost it, if through some calamity that we lose the technology that we have and the technological advantage and then have to fend for ourselves, having lost all the knowledge about how to get along without it. We'd be in some serious trouble. It's a good point John makes, though. I mean,
yes,
it'd be nice to have the best of both worlds, to be able to live longer and still have.
It's all about balance.
Yeah, to still have a connection to the natural world that I think we have lost along the way.
And a respect for it. I think we've lost that, too.
I don't know if you have any thought on his first part of his thing about Atlantis being under the ice, but it's as good a theory as any.
It is. And again, maybe Plato was looking across at this wonderful, beautiful island, and he just created a story out of it. But it was a real place, just like, again, with novels of today. They could be set in real locations, even though the story itself is entirely fantastical.
In the 30, 45 seconds we've got before the break, we talked about UFO memes and disinformation. Have you ever seen any? It's clear that they must use it. Have you ever seen any of it yourself that you say, I know that's wrong? Somebody's putting that out.
Videos that I thought were just a crock, some disclosure stuff that just didn't seem right. I think you kind of know on a gut level when you're being had.
They're good at it, though, the people that do this stuff.
They are, yeah. But, the more that they show us, though, the more we're going to start catching on. So they got to keep changing their game because people do catch on quick. And then once they catch on, they'll spread and say, hey, this meme, uh-uh.
Well, I tend to believe that they're better at their job than we are at ours, though, because they've been able to keep everyone off balance
ahead, right? Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah.
We're talking with Marie Jones about the new book, Viral Mythology, some new viral mythology being created all around us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Marie Jones, co-author of Viral Mythology. When we come back, we'll go to as many of your phone calls as we can get to right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Going now to the phones with your questions from my guest, Marie Jones, Wildcard Line Joe in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Joe.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Nothing much. A lot, actually. I want to just thank you all for your service. I love all your announcers, and I'll definitely miss John B. Wells. I thought he was great, and good luck to him, and I love all of you announcers. How the people know nowadays how they need to have more true humility and truly know their world history, because every true empire really kept on repeating history. And like nowadays, like you were saying about on the internet, how people need to know their history instead of just what Honey Boo Boo's doing or American Idol and all the nonsense is out there that we fill our minds with. And every empire that was growing and growing until they started thinking that they were gods. And when they started that happening, then something happened to them. They got washed away or they got built. And it's so big, they ended up destroying themselves. And my question was about Atlantis. Atlantis, instead of it sinking, do you think that it was washed away in the flood, the Great Flood?
It could have been. It could have been buried in a tsunami from a supervolcanic eruption. I know that one of the locations that Atlantis is allegedly supposed to be at is near some real heavy-duty volcanic activity. It could have sunk from a little mini ice age, and then when the ice melted, you know, like the past caller said, the sea level rose and just sort of swallowed it up. I think that if it did exist, the clues are in the stories and the legends and the songs and the tales of Atlantis. There's probably little clues in there. Either that or we may really never know. It may have been a totally fictional invention of a very imaginative mind.
Thanks, Joe. You figure that Plato, as you mentioned, Plato wrote about it. So you got to figure it was within the realm of the known world at that time or on the edges of it, right?
Or he had heard about it, you know, from somebody that had seen it. And it's just, I hate to say this, but there's so much of history that we may totally be off the mark on simply for the simple, ridiculous fact that we weren't there. You know, we weren't there to be eyewitnesses. So everything that we get from that point on is interpretation rolled into more interpretation upon more interpretation, or somebody's spin that they put on it. It's like the little nugget of fact gets lost with all of this fictionalization that's padded on top of it as it gets less. So our entire history could be wrong for all we know. And I'm sure a lot of it is.
Oh, yeah. I think you make the point in the book about the library at Alexandria.
Right.
Being lost, and who knows what history was lost with that. There are going to be all kinds of stuff that's been lost forever.
Oh, my gosh. And the Crusades and the Inquisitions, I'm sure there were objects and artifacts and things that were destroyed. In the Vatican's got a whole lot of stuff. How do we know they haven't destroyed half of what's down in that basement of theirs in the vaults? We're getting a very specific idea of our history. And you got to wonder if the information that we're being fed is being fed to us on purpose, or it's just, this is just how it happened to have been interpreted. If it, you know, just it wasn't done on purpose. It was just done this way organically. But it could be completely wrong.
We'll go east of the Rockies. John in Ohio. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, George and Marie.
Hi.
Like to give you an example of how it may be the perception of information that is critical as much as the source and delivery of it, even if the information's wrong. Let's say you have a couple that's expecting a bouncing baby boy, and you ask them, you know, one of the natural questions, if you come up with a name. And some may say, well, we want a name that's unique, not something like, say, George or John.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so you suggest the name Judas and watch the reaction.
Right. But yeah, the symbolism of that name.
Yeah, perception is 9/10 of the value, as they say, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law.
Right. And the problem there is that we all perceive things a little bit differently. So now we have to deal with that aspect of trying to figure out what the truth is. We all have our own perception of the truth. Yeah, that's definitely true.
And for the record, George and John are fine names. Thank you, John.
They are.
First-time caller Vicki in Indiana. Welcome to the program, Vicki. Hi. Hello?
Uh-oh, we lost her.
We lost Vicki? One more time? All right, we're going to go to Michelle in Wisconsin, if Michelle is there. Hello? I'm not sure if we have anyone on the line here now or not. Are there any of these lines working? Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Good morning. How you doing? Who's this?
This is Michelle in Wisconsin.
Hi, Michelle in Wisconsin. What's on your mind?
I wanted to ask Marie if, I think you called it memes. Is that what you're referring to when you're talking about the images that keep being depicted, like in different cultures, where it's what some could interpret as an alien, if she ever considered, or if anyone else ever brought up that it could be fetuses, like a miscarriage, because, you know, at maybe 2-3 months, fetus resembles an alien quite a bit.
They do, now that you think of it. Yeah, I mean, a meme is just something that spreads from one person to another person. It could be an idea, it could be an image, it could be a behavior. You know, a meme could be something physical, like fist bumping or high-fiving. It's just something that spreads throughout a culture. So, like, with extraterrestrials and aliens, it's really interesting how you'll see one picture of something, that, you know, this new type of alien, and then you'll start seeing it everywhere. And you'll see one particular type, like the reptilians, and then all of a sudden that aspect will explode, and you won't see any more grays, or you won't see any more of the beautiful blonde contactees. So memes sort of catch fire. They're called mental viruses often because they act like a virus does. They actually infect people's minds as they spread through a culture. So, yeah, but that's interesting because I've never thought about the fetus thing till now, and now I can definitely see it.
Well, thank you for the call. You know, that reminds me of a UFO story. Remember, there was late 80s in Russia. There was a UFO incident, major incident, reported in Russian media. It was a landing in this city. Aliens got out and walked around in a park. And by the time the story is reported, I think by Pravda, or gets back over here, by TASS, I remember seeing Dan Rather reporting it on the CBS Evening News and kind of sort of smirking. He goes, the Russians have reported this 8-foot-tall alien, 8 feet tall and black, and it's as if, well, we're laughing because we know what aliens look like. That's not it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Because we've been conditioned to believe that aliens are the cover of Whitley Strieber's book.
Right, they all look the same.
That's an archetype, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And hey, like you said before, if you believe in the multiverse, we could be visited by a number of different types of aliens, including those that are invisible that we don't even see at all.
One of the areas we did not touch on in the book is about urban legends. This is a whole other area of modern myth making stories. For example, the Hook Man story. I guess it's the boyfriend. I don't know. The traditional story is the boyfriend, girlfriend are on Lover's Lane and talking to each other. And I guess he tells the story about the Hook Man. They drive away and what?
It's the hook is in the, the bumper of the car.
Yeah. And how do those stories spread?
Or
how does it fit
door,
into your mind?
Yeah, it was the car door handle.
Right.
You know what's funny about urban legends? Is a lot of them start off as just freaky news stories, you know, somebody, a serial killer, or somebody gets murdered, or somebody's attacked in the middle of the night. And it might be something totally innocuous, totally normal, like a jogger getting mugged in Central Park. But by the time it gets to, you know, the upper echelons of the media, it's just been completely altered. And all of a sudden, the mugger has become a monster, you know, a Bigfoot-type monster. A lot of the urban legends are based on actual news stories. Others are completely made up, and yet somehow go viral to the point where you actually have people start reporting them. And one that comes to mind that my son got real fascinated with is Slenderman, who is this big, tall, faceless, skinny entity that wears like a suit and a tie and hangs around parks and schools, and if it looks at you, you die. Okay, that's the urban legend. What's really funny is this is a totally fictional creation, and yet people have started to report seeing Slenderman all over the world. So what does something get into our psyche and then we begin to physically manifest it somehow?
Well, a lot of people have said that about UFOs. They say that every time a UFO movie comes out, that's what inspires these spikes in UFO sightings, which,
right.
And I think that can be true to some extent, but a lot of the times when we've had huge UFO flaps, it had nothing to do with a movie coming out.
Right. And I mean, you know, you have to ask yourself, too, if a movie comes out, obviously people are going to start looking up a lot more. So maybe they really are seeing something because they're looking for it now.
Yeah, it's like people saying, why don't UFOs fly over cities? Why is it always some country bumpkin that sees it? No offense to people who live in the country, but
right.
It's because people in rural areas are outside. They look at the sky. They don't.
Well, they can see the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can see what's going on up there a lot more easily. So.
On the wild card line, Neil in California. Hi, Neil.
Hi, how's everyone doing?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Good.
I just wanted to get a viewpoint on something that it seems like throughout history, it seems like there's been a certain group of people, or I guess you could say a civilization, that have been chosen or picked to advance. And why is it there's a handful of civilizations who have advanced, but local tribes or tribes 50 to 100 miles away don't advance as quickly. It just seems like there's a certain group of people or a civilization that that are chosen or kind of picked,
right,
that advance a lot more quickly than anywhere else, like Central America, Europe, the Middle East, and parts of Asia. I just wanted to see what your viewpoint was on that.
You know, why is Egypt, why did they show such advancement? The Mayan culture, is it because they were picked out by the aliens who came, you know, the ancient astronaut theory, who came and said, hey, we're going to give you guys this information because you're ready for it? It could be just the progression of evolution of certain cultures and civilizations is a little faster than others, so they may be more receptive to advancement and new ideas and new technology a little bit quicker. But it could be either one. They're either chosen by somebody else, or they place themselves at the top. It's sort of the cream of the crop.
You know, we like to believe, thank you, Neil, for that call. We like to believe that we're ready for something in the area of aliens. We're ready for disclosure. You know, we're conditioned to accept the truth. Come on, give us the truth and disclose what you know. And I guess it really depends on what's going to be disclosed, what the ultimate truth is. It might not be something as simple as aliens from another planet coming here to visit once in a while.
Right, right. And like you said, in order to prepare for that, some of the memes and some of the things that go viral are meant to get us ready, to sort of prime us for it.
Yeah, a lot of people believe it's not an accident, the flurry of movies.
Yeah, it's like
movies.
The marketing research, you know, where you go see a movie and then they ask you 25,000 questions about what you saw and did you get it? And they could be doing the very same thing. Where are the marketing research guinea pigs?
Sue in Ohio on the wild card line. Good morning, Sue. Hello. I'm not sure. Is Sue gone? We're going to move on. I want to ask you one other question.
Gone.
Okay.
Not
well,
gone.
We're waiting to hear from you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, goodness. I don't know why you didn't hear me. I'm sorry. I was yelling. I'm sorry. This is a wonderful show. I wanted to tell you, and thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
I called George Nori's show before. I usually call on the sciences, and I wanted to kind of add a few points about maybe Greek myth. First, I wanted to mention, though, an urban legend. Back at the turn of the last century, often people from Eastern Europe were recruited to come to the U.S. because the streets were paved with gold.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They really weren't.
Oh.
Really, people did come. My grandfather came here, probably thinking that it was the case. But to the Greek myths, I thought I would add this. You know, we don't know what Plato. It could have been fact, fiction, a mixture of both, and imagination. Right. But there has been some evidence that has supported certain characters, at least, have been found in Greek myths. One, I don't know whether you're aware of, recently some archaeologists have unearthed fossil bones of a pygmy woolly mammoth, a pygmy mammoth. Now, picture his skull. He has a skull, but in the center there is a opening, a hole for his nose. And it's believed that the Greeks may have seen these skulls and thought they were these giant cyclops that were living on the coast of the Black Sea. Really. The other is the Amazon women. It has been found substantially the bones of women who were warriors. They were buried with warrior garb, shields, everything in the Kurgans around the coast of the Sea of Azov and other areas in the Black Sea. So there seems to be some fact and fiction both.
Right. Whenever we find bones and artifacts and things that line up and sort of corroborate the myth, that's when we start to get the proof.
Hobbits. Wasn't something they're dubbing hobbits that were found on an island in Southeast Asia somewhere?
In Indonesia, it was Homo floresiensis, I think that's how you pronounce it. They were very, very small people that actually were wiped out by a supervolcano. That was them.
Yeah. Sue, thank you for that call. One other question, Marie, before we hear the music and wrap it up. How did this change you, writing this book? What was the big surprise that you didn't see coming?
I really had to, I'm sure, could probably speak for Larry on this too. We really had to look at history in a completely different way, because if you look at how information gets to us today, you can apply that to how it got to us from yesterday. And really the idea that we are probably basing our entire interpretation of human history on just a very limited amount of information. And I really want to know what all the other information is that we haven't seen yet. So it just really made me aware of the fact that the past that we think is the past may not have necessarily been the way we were taught.
I'd love to know all that lost history that we probably will never know. What I'd like to know even more, though, is what the book will be when somebody writes the viral mythology book in 100 or 200 years from now, what they'll be writing about this period right now.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad, but I think they're going to mainly, technology is going to be what really sets us apart. That's sort of our hallmark, is going to be the technology advancements that we have made.
You got another version of this book in mind, a follow-up?
Possibly. Maybe 10 years from now. We'll see what goes viral.
Yeah, you're going to have to get some sleep and catch up on your life probably now. I know how hard it is to write one of these. Okay. Hey, Marie, thank you very much for joining us.
Fascinating
stuff. I wish you the best of luck. The book is called Viral Mythology. I encourage people to read it. Thanks also to Larry Flaxman, your co-author, and I hope you'll come back and see us another time.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you. I want to thank the Brian Tuohy, our earlier guest, author of Larceny Games, and then all my friends there at Coast who helped tonight, Brian Opry, Tricia Pepe, Dan Galanti, Chris Boros, our webmaster, Sean. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Good night, everyone.